Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 7. The sacrifice performed by Daksha. Text 19. Tada swaprabhaya tesham jyotayantya disho dasha mushnam teja upanitas tarksyena stotra vajana. Shishinatai Gora Hare Ki. Tadaswa Prabhaya Tesham
Tadaswa Prabhaya Tesham
Jyotayantya Dishodasha
Jyotayantya Dishodasha
Mushnam Steja Upanitas
Mushnam Steja Upanitas
Tarksyena Stotra Vajina
Tarksyena Stotra Vajina
Tadaswa Prabhaya Tesham
Tadaswa Prabhaya Tesham
Jyotayantya Dishodasha
Jyotayantya Dishodasha
Mushnam Steja Upanitas Upanitas Tarksyena Stotra Vajina
Tarksyena Stotra Vajina
Tadaswa Prabhaya Tesham
Tadaswa Prabhaya Tesham
Jyotayantya Dishodasha
Jyotayantya Dishodasha
Mushnam Steja Upanitas
Mushnam Steja Upanitas
Tarksyena Stotra Vajina
Mushnam Steja Upanitas
Tada.
Tada.
At that time.
At that time.
Swaprabhaya.
By his own effulgence.
Tesha.
All of them.
Jyotayantya.
By brightness.
Disha.
Directions.
Dasha.
Ten.
Mushnan.
Diminishing.
Teja.
Effulgence.
Upanita.
Brought.
Tarksyena.
By Garuda.
Stotravajina.
Stotravajina.
Whose wings are called Brihat and Ratantra.
Whose wings are called Brihat and Ratantra.
Translation. Lord Narayan was seated on the shoulder of Stotra, or Garuda, who had big wings. As soon as the Lord appeared, all directions were illuminated, diminishing the luster of Brahma and the others present. Purport. A description of Narayan is given in the following two shlokas. So we'll now read the first of those following two slokas, text 20. Shyamo Hiranya Rashanorka Karita Jushto Nilalaka Brahmara Mandata Kundalasya Shankabja Chakra Sharachapa Gadasi Charma Vyagraya Hiranmaya Bujair Ivakarnikara. Translation. His complexion was blackish, his garment yellow like gold, and his helmet as dazzling as the sun. His hair was bluish, the color of black beads, and his face was decorated with earrings. His eight hands held a conch shell, wheel, club, lotus flower, arrow, bow, shield, and sword. And they were decorated with golden ornaments, such as bangles and bracelets. His whole body resembled a blossoming tree, beautifully decorated with various kinds of flowers. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The face of Lord Vishnu, as described in this verse, appears like a lotus flower with bees humming over it. All of the ornaments on the body of Lord Vishnu resemble molten gold of the reddish gold color of the morning sunrise. The Lord appears just as the morning sun rises to protect the whole universal creation. His arms display different weapons, and his eight hands are compared to the eight petals of a lotus flower. All the weapons mentioned are for the protection of his devotees. Generally, in the four hands of Vishnu, there are a wheel, club, conch shell, and lotus flower. These four symbols are seen in the four hands of Vishnu in different arrangements. The club and the wheel are the Lord's symbols of punishment for the demons and miscreants. And the lotus flower and conch shell are used to bless the devotees. There are always two classes of men, the devotees and the demons. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Paritranaya Sadhunam, the Lord is always ready for the protection of the devotees and annihilation of the demons. There are demons and devotees in this material world, but in the spiritual world, there is no such distinction. In other words, Lord Vishnu is the proprietor of both the material and spiritual worlds. In the material world, almost everyone is of the demoniac nature, but there are also devotees who appear to be in the material world, although they're always situated in the spiritual world. A devotee's position is always transcendental, and he is always protected by Lord Vishnu. Translations. Lord Narayan was seated on the shoulder of Stotra, or Garuda, who had big wings. As soon as the Lord appeared, all directions were illuminated, diminishing the luster of Brahma and the others present. His complexion was blackish, his garment yellow like gold, and his helmet as dazzling as the sun. His hair was bluish, the color of black bees, and his face was decorated with earrings. His eight hands held a conch shell, wheel, club, lotus flower, arrow, bow, shield, and sword, and they were decorated with golden ornaments, such as bangles and bracelets. His whole body resembled a blossoming tree, beautifully decorated with various kinds of flowers. Meghyanatamirandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurminitam yena tasmaya shri gurave namaha shri chitani mano vishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa gadamayam dadati svapadantikam vanchakapatarubhyas chakripa sindubhya evacha paditanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pramanajananda, Shri Advaiti Gadadha, Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhaktivrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So these verses are describing the appearance of Lord Narayan at the sacrificial arena of Daksha. There are two verses which are specifically describing him. We read the first. And we can see that the appearance of Lord Narayan in that eight-armed form was most stunning and captivating for all the devotees and all the people there. Most astonishing sight. Actually, there's nothing which that sight can truly or accurately be compared to within this material world. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Krishna. Krishna means the all-attractive person. Whatever attractive qualities exist, so many attractive qualities are existing, so all of them, all of those attractive qualities, he possesses all of them in full. And actually he is the reservoir of all those attractive qualities from which everyone else who has some attractive qualities, some small attractive qualities, they are drawing their supply of attractiveness from him, who is the reservoir of all attractive qualities. So of course we know everyone has some attractive qualities. Even some insignificant living entities, by our standards, some insects or some animals of some sort, there will at least be some other living entity who will find that particular being attractive. We may feel that so many of these creatures are very ugly, but members of the same species will think, oh, what a beautiful ant, what a beautiful giraffe, just see his neck. So every living being has some attractiveness. And where is that attractiveness coming from? It's coming from Krishna. And all the attractiveness which has been distributed out amongst so many living entities, millions, billions, trillions of living entities, all of that attractiveness can be found in Krishna. And, for that matter, however much attractiveness there is in this material world, that's actually just a very small and perverted reflection of the actual attractiveness which is there in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Bhagavad Gita, in the 10th chapter, Lord Krishna, after describing quite elaborately different of his special features, he tells Arjuna that what is the point of going into further detail about my manifestations within this material world? Because even the most beautiful and splendorous manifestation of my energy in the material world is coming from just a single spark of my splendor. With just a tiny fragment of myself, I'm maintaining and sustaining this entire material realm. So of course we see some attractiveness. Different types of attractivenesses are there. Physical attractiveness, some attractiveness of the mind, some very pleasant nature like that, personal nature. Different types of attractiveness we see in the material world. But they're very, very minute demonstrations or manifestations of the attractiveness which is there in Krishna in full. So, therefore, any attempt to describe the attractiveness of the Lord using terms which we may be able to easily relate to, for example, as we see here, making comparisons, that the Lord, his face looked like this, and his arms looked like that, then there's no question of them actually doing justice to the attractiveness of the Lord, but simply some small indication is being given, really. Just some small indication. Like, his garments were yellow like gold. His helmet was dazzling like the sun. His hair was bluish, the color of black beads. His whole body resembled a blossoming tree covered with many different types of flowers. So we hear these descriptions and we think, oh yes, gold. Gold is very effulgent, very attractive. The sun is very effulgent indeed, very dazzlingly brilliant. And a beautiful blossoming tree with many nice flowers is very beautiful. So by drawing these comparisons with things which we are familiar with and which are very nice by our standards, then we get some appreciation that, oh yes, Krishna, Lord Narayan, must have looked very beautiful. But actually he looks much more beautiful than that. Much more beautiful. We can hardly begin to understand. So beautiful that when even men would see him, grown men, sometimes they would just faint. We can't imagine that. Seeing a man who is so attractive that even men, that we as men, we may faint. We can't conceive of that. Things like this. So we can't imagine, but just to give us some idea, drawing comparisons with things which we're familiar with, we're getting some description as given, so we can appreciate, oh yes, he must have been very, very beautiful, but actually he was a lot more beautiful. He's so beautiful, he is all attractive. There's no living being, there's nothing in existence which is not fully attracted to Krishna, at least when they become exposed to Krishna nicely. So this description is given here, and the idea is to try to attract us. In material life we are very fond, we're always being attracted by different things, being attracted by members of the opposite sex, material luxuries and facilities for sense gratification of different types, beautiful scenes, beautiful sceneries, and different types of things like this. Our minds, we are prone to be attracted by all these things. But by being attracted in these ways, we get distracted from the all-attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, everyone is looking. Everyone is looking for the most attractive person, the most wonderful place, the most wonderful association, the most wonderful activity. Everyone is looking, looking and looking, trying to find those things. But actually they can only be found with Krishna, in Krishna and in the association of Krishna. So we're looking in the material world, but we're looking for things which cannot really be found in the material world. Therefore, we're always disappointed. Material life means searching and searching for that higher taste, greater happiness, greatest happiness. But at every turn, we're being disappointed. This is the story of life in the material world. One disappointment after another. Perhaps someday some devotee will write a history book of the world, how people, nations, and cultures and whatnot all got disappointed. They strived for so much, but they all got disappointed. They all lost everything in the end. So that is the story of material life. Trying to find something, most wonderful thing, most attractive thing, but looking in the wrong place. Always looking in the wrong place, therefore not finding it, therefore being disappointed. But Krishna, his beauty is so stunning. We were reading the other day that Lord Chaitanya, his appearance was so stunning that even blind men would just somehow, of course they're completely blind, but despite being completely blind, somehow they would sense his presence and they would just run towards him to embrace him. So it's quite inconceivable. But that is the nature of the beauty of the Lord. Quite inconceivable by our standards. We can't imagine any phenomenon like that. But in relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, such things are happening. Just like Srila Jiva Goswami gives a nice description that in Brahma Samhita, it's stated that in the spiritual world, all talking is singing, walking is dancing, and the water tastes like nectar. So we, when we hear this description, then a picture can appear in our mind, and we can think, oh yes, very nice. Walking is like dancing, and we can picture people dancing. Talking is like singing, and we can picture people singing. And we have also tasted some nectar drink of some sort. So in our minds we can think, oh yes, that's very nice. And in this way we may feel some attraction. But Jiva Goswami goes on to explain that if the talking is like singing, we can think of singing. But then he asks, if the talking is like singing, then what is the singing like? That we can't describe. We have no vocabulary. Because when we think about expressing oneself vocally, very sweetly and very nicely, we think of singing. But he is saying that the ordinary talking is like singing. So what is the singing like? But that we can't even really think. And the walking is like dancing. So if a person is going to move very gracefully and very nicely, they may dance. But if ordinary walking is like dancing, then what is the dancing like? That we have, there's no way that we can actually capture that idea within our minds. And if the water is like nectar, we know what nectar is like. If we think of some nice drink, we think of nectar. But what is beyond that? So if the water is like nectar, Jiva Goswami asks, what is the nectar like? That we have no vocabulary for, We have no thing which we've experienced which we can relate it to. So he says, actually, it's inconceivable. It's truly inconceivable. And he says that in our conditioned state, strictly speaking, when we're not really even capable of desiring these things, because we don't know of them. And you can only really desire something which you have some conception of. If something is quite inconceivable, then you can't really desire it. So he says, we are not truly capable of really desiring that state. So, but that state is there. And, just like in the case of Daksha, he was initially quite unqualified, but then he became qualified, and then the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared before him, and then full realization was there. Direct realization. Right before his eyes. So we also, we're trying to become qualified. That becoming qualified means through executing devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we're trying to cultivate the mood of pure devotional service. Always being fully engaged in activities for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. In a mood of devotion and with no attachment for our own personal gratification. This we are trying to cultivate. This is what we're meant to be trying to cultivate. So if we cultivate this, as we cultivate this more and more, as the devotee becomes more and more absorbed in pure devotional service, then the realization will come. Realization will come. And these things, which are otherwise, just by their very definition, inconceivable to us in our conditioned state, gradually these things will come. Realization and perception, just as Daksha is having. Gradually it'll come. And then what was otherwise inconceivable will become conceivable. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, in commenting on the verse which Prabhupada referred to yesterday in Brahma Samhita, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Valochanena Santa Sadaiva Hridayeshu Valokayanti. So Srila Prabhupada was referring to that, how Daksha saw the Lord, and this was because he had developed those eyes. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, commenting on that verse, he says that this means that the devotee is seeing the Supreme Lord within his heart, Santa Sadaiva Hridayesha Valokayanti, within the heart. So what are those eyes? What are those eyes which are seeing the Lord? Not directly these eyes with which we're observing the material world around us, but these are the eyes of the soul. So as the devotee practices devotional service more and more, then the heart becomes cleansed. One becomes more and more spiritually purified. The soul becomes uncovered. At the moment, the soul is covered over by layers of material conditioning, the material elements, material attachments. These are formed like an actual covering over the soul, which it is buried underneath. So as one practices devotional service, one is cleaning the heart, cleaning away those coverings. So when those coverings become completely cleansed away, then the soul is existing there. The soul is manifest. The soul manifests, and the soul manifests means the spiritual body with spiritual senses, including spiritual eyes. So in this way, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says that that particular statement in Brahma Samhita, that the devotees with the eyes of love see the Supreme Personality, but we're not on that fully liberated platform. We're not on that platform where our spiritual nature is actually manifest. But there's no doubt that as we sound vibration, then to chant it even one day, what to speak of every day for years, but even to chant it one day, 16 rounds, perhaps of the Coca-Cola Maha Mantra or something, some mundane sound, just chanting and chanting for 2 hours or so. Actually, it wouldn't be possible. It wouldn't really be possible. For even for one day, what to speak of 1 year every day, 2, 10, 20 years every day, it wouldn't be possible. So how is it possible? Because some realization is coming. Some actual spiritual experience is coming. Some purification is coming. One is coming into contact with the spiritual nature of the Lord in the form of His holy name. Therefore one is able to do it. And not just do it, but actually if one applies oneself very nicely, then one will become very blissful doing that. So we find, if we absorb ourselves in chanting the Hare Krishna mantra seriously, then it's a very wonderful experience. Why? Because some spiritual realization, spiritual nature is actually manifesting. We are contenting that, at least to some extent. Here the description is given of the beautiful body of the Lord. And here on the altar, we see the deity forms of the Lord. And actually we know that even though by material standards they may be considered, they would be considered statues, but actually we know that this is directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. In fact, three forms of each, multiple manifestations, they're standing right here in our presence. And we may be falling asleep in front of them. We may have fallen asleep in front of them. So these things are happening. But actually it's directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because He's manifesting in such a form, then the possibility of becoming, of not being so easily able to realize that it is Him, that possibility is there. And of course those who are on the material platform, they will think, oh, just see, these are just some statues. But the devotees, through engaging sincerely in devotional service, performing kirtan before the deity, decorating the deity very nicely, offering food to the deity, offering arati to the deity, understanding that the temple is the property of the deity and we must look after it as a service to them and bring people to have their darshan, like this. If the devotees are serving in this type of mood, then when the devotees come before the deities, then some realization will be there. Some realization. That they'll look at the deities and spontaneously feel, how nice, how beautiful. And be captivated, actually, by the beautiful vision of the deities. So how is this coming? Not just some mental concoction, some imagination, but this is because this is actually directly the Supreme Lord. And when we engage in devotional service sincerely, then some purification comes and some realization comes. And eventually that realization will come completely. That one will directly realize that actually here is the Supreme Lord. And one will be able to directly relate with the Supreme Lord in His deity form. So the key is the development of devotional service. Development of the devotional attitude. This is how Daksha got that good fortune. The Lord appeared in His presence. That is how we are getting some small realization as we're carrying on in our devotional service now. And that is how in the end one can achieve, one can enter one's direct relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's one, been many nice stories. One nice story I can recall, I don't know if you've heard it, was the story of Gauridas Pandit. He had the first set of Gaunatai deities that were made. They were made during the time that Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda were still on the planet. They are still personally present performing their pastimes, and these Gaunatai deities were made life size. So one day, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda came to visit Gauridas Pandit, and they walked into the house, and then they saw these deities, life-size deities of themselves. So they were quite astonished to see this. Anyway, they sat and spoke with Gauridas Pandit for some time. Gauridas Pandit was feeling very happy to have the two lords personally present in his house, and he was becoming more and more attached to having them there. So when finally they said that now we have to leave, Gauridas Pandit jumped up, barred the door, and said, "No, you're not going. You can't leave. You must stay longer." So Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda said, "What? We have to go. We have so many things to do. You can't stop us." But Gauridas was saying, "No. You have to stay. You must stay. I won't let you go." So he was arguing back and forward with Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. Then the deities on the altar said that, "All right, let them stay here and we'll go." So Gauridas Pandit was astonished, his deities talking. And then they stepped off the altar and started moving towards the door. So again he ran over and barred the door. Said, "No, you can't go. Get back up on the altar." So then Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, who had come to visit, they said, "No, no, let them go and we'll stay. We don't mind." So then it was going back and forward. The deities would try to leave. Gauridas Pandit would stop them, send them back to the altar. Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, who had come to visit, tried to leave. He would stop them. Then the deities moved towards the door, and Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda stepped up onto the altar. Gauridas Pandit was running back and forth. The deities were getting off the altar, on the altar, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda getting on the altar, off the altar. After a while, he couldn't remember which were the deities and which were Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda who'd come to visit. But in the end, one Lord Chaitanya and one Lord Nityananda left, and one of each stayed. And to this day, no one knows. But those deities or whatever, whoever stayed, those deities are still existing in Bengal. So, the deity is directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Due to our being in a conditioned state, and due to the fact that those people who carve the deities, they may not be so completely expert to make the forms absolutely lifelike. So some sort of difference we may see that the deity, anyway, we may not have that so much perception like that, but actually it is like that. So this realization will come bit by bit, gradually. Therefore, worshipping the deity is very, very important part of our practice of devotional service. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada explains, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains, that in this Kali Yuga, there's no need to do anything except chant the holy names. You can just simply chant the holy names and you can become God realized. So Prabhupada then explains that this is a fact. Actually, you literally need to do nothing else but chant the holy names. But the problem is that if you were to chant the holy names constantly, which is obviously implied, that 24 hours a day you would only chant the holy names. If you were to chant the holy names
24 hours a day, 365 days a year, you have to be pure. You have to be completely free from any tendency to commit offenses or to deviate in any way. Otherwise, you won't be able to chant. As Lord Chaitanya says, Trinadapi, Sinichena, Tororapi, Sivichina, Amanina, Manadena, Kirtaniya, Sadahari. One should chant the holy names of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street, being more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. But only in that state of mind can one chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. If one is not in that state of mind, one's chanting will be interrupted, and one eventually may tend to get deviated. So therefore Prabhupada explains that along with chanting the holy names, worship of the deity is also essential for the neophyte devotees to come to this point of being so fixed in Krishna consciousness, of becoming advanced in Krishna consciousness. So all these practices we have to cultivate. In this way our hearts gradually will become purified and more realization will come. These things which otherwise, or at least to those who are on the material platform, may be quite inconceivable and intangible, gradually they become conceivable, gradually they become realities as the devotee's heart becomes purified in devotional service. Until the devotee becomes completely addicted to Krishna, completely addicted. Therefore Rupa Goswami, in order to glorify the form of the Lord, he says that, he gives another number of nice examples. One is that if you want to remain materially attached, if that is your idea, you want to remain involved and quite entangled in family, society, friendship, mundane love, and so on. If your desire is to remain absorbed in that way of life, then don't go to see Krishna. Don't go down to Keshigat. Because there, you will see Govinda. And when you see him, all your interest in all those other things will just disappear. It will be gone. So this is another way he's doing, trying to do the same thing actually, which is being done here by Śrīla Vyāsadeva. He's trying to glorify the beauty of the form of the Lord by utilizing some, very cleverly utilizing a type of material example. Here the example is, or the method is, to compare the form of the Lord to beautiful material things. There in that example of Rupa Goswami, he's saying that all the best things in material life, which everyone's attached to, if they see Krishna, they'll lose their attachment to. So in this way he's expressing, giving us some idea that the form of the Lord is so beautiful, incomparably. Even the best material things look very pale in comparison, and one will just give them up very quickly, having been exposed to the beauty of the Lord. So it's very nice. And we should try to cultivate this and meditate on the beauty of the Lord. Some comments or questions? Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, the time Lord Krishna was going to kill cancer, he's mentioned Shiva Bhagavatam that so many people get so many different problems. Mm-hmm. The woman says so many reincarnation of Cupid, and some is so many dead. And so how to perceive Krishna in the real way, or in the real form, as a devotee?
Well, we perceive him according to the descriptions given in Shastra. They were directly seeing Krishna in terms of the 12 rasas, 5 direct and 7 indirect rasas. That's the idea which is expressed there. That some people, like young men, strong young men, they saw Krishna and Balaram as being like very robust and very strong young men who are going to fight in a battle. So that's one of the, that's one type of indirect rasa, a chivalrous type of rasa. They saw in that spirit. Then the young girls, as you said, they saw Krishna to be like Cupid. So that's the conjugal attraction. Then the older ladies, they saw Krishna and Balaram as like very delicate young children. So this is maternal attitude. Then the wrestlers themselves, they saw Krishna and Balaram as death. So this is the ghastly rasa, indirect rasa. So in this way, the different people were seeing him like that. And then beyond that, there are some Mayavadis there, or impersonalists. And when they saw Krishna and Balaram walking across the arena, they didn't actually see Krishna and Balaram. They saw these effulgences moving across the arena. And then there were some mystic yogis. And when they saw Krishna and Balaram walking across, they saw these four-armed Vishnu forms, Paramatma-type forms. So these were all, you know, that these different people who are described there, they were all seeing in terms of different transcendental direct realizations of the Absolute Truth. So now we're not like that. We shouldn't, you know, put ourselves in some position and think, well, you know, I might like to see him in a chivalrous way, or I might like to see him as, you know, that would be artificial. They were actually realizing directly like that, these people. So we should certainly have some conception of the Lord, that's a fact. And that should be according to scripture. And like here we have Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, we can see them with our own eyes. Radha and Krishna, like this. And in principle we should understand that they are our masters and we are their servants. And if we engage in cultivating devotional service, then in time we'll enter into our particular relationship, which will be in, you know, one of those moods or some combination perhaps of some of those moods. But that will come, you know, in its own way in time. But now the main thing is Jivera Surupoya Krishnera Nityadas. We are the eternal servants of Krishna. We have to get used to living like that. Sometimes we consider alternatives. You know, I don't feel so much like serving Krishna. Maybe I can become a rich businessman or a famous musician, or, you know, devotees sort of have these little hallucinations. Some do sometimes. So we have to, the thing is, we have to adjust. We have to get used to thinking that I'm actually the eternal servant of Krishna and become fixed in that conception. And then as far as conceiving of Krishna himself, well then according to this description here, the other descriptions, the pictures we see, very nice pictures, we can conceive of them in those terms. Some other comments or questions?
When chanting japa, we want to hear the sound vibration and concentrate on that.
Yes.
Is it also favorable to try to meditate on or concentrate on some image of the Lord in one's mind? Cultivate some vision of the Lord? Is that
best thing is to just hear the chanting. Then as one advances, because the name and the form are not different, and actually the name is the key. There's name, form, qualities and pastimes. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains in Harinam Chintamani that realization comes in that sequence also. In other words, it begins with the name. From the name you realize the form. From the name and the form, you realize the qualities. From the name, form and qualities, then you realize the pastimes. So, when we are chanting at least, when we are chanting, we should make a particular effort to chant nicely and hear that chanting nicely. At other times when we may not be chanting, we may be reading or listening to class or whatever, doing some other type of service. Then, to meditate on the form of the Lord or to remember some pastime, that's very nice. Certainly very nice. But particularly when we're chanting, we should try and give our full attention to that. And then from that, actual realization will come. That one will first of all realize that the name and the form are the same. Through the name, through chanting the name, gradually that perception will come. Yeah. And then when you perceive the form, then gradually you'll perceive the qualities, because they're like integrally part of the form. And then the form, the qualities manifest in the pastimes. So in this way there's a sequence like that. Mother Charity. That's absolutely correct. First class answer. Good, very excellent preaching. Yes, the name is the foundation of all of our Krishna consciousness. Within our Krishna consciousness, there may be other things other than the name, but if you take the name away, then you'll lose all the other things also. Because whatever we have in Krishna consciousness, we have because of being attached to the holy name. So yeah, we understand, particularly in Kali Yuga, that advancement in Krishna consciousness is based on chanting the holy names. It's the fundamental, essential activity from which everything else is developing.
Yes, they also mentioned that specifically mentioned that the conditions are about this 45.
Yes.
But also you find the same thing that the resident of Vrindavan sometimes they cheat by the chief of Krishna getting more expensive.
Yes, well they're not actually cheating. They may appear to make mistakes, but they're not really making mistakes. In the course of Krishna's pastimes, in order to enhance the pastimes, like it appears, if you take a very graphic example, take Jatila and Kutila. They're very much part of Krishna's pastimes. But it appears that they're like in a constant state of being mistaken, like making a drastic mistake constantly, that they don't like Krishna. So this is, you could say this is the greatest mistake a person could make. They decide they don't like Krishna and they're not interested in Krishna. But it's part of the pastimes of the Lord that he's making them act in that way. Actually, they're very attached to Srimati Radharani particularly. And they're also attached to Krishna. But by the influence of Yoga Maya, they're acting in such a way that it appears that they're terribly mistaken. But it's just to enhance the pastimes of the Lord. So, therefore, a realized soul, very advanced, perfect devotee, even when they apparently make a mistake, it's perfect. Because it's so intimately connected with Krishna and part of their loving exchange with Krishna. And from it, from it comes more loving service to Krishna, actually. Like it appears that the inhabitants of Vrindavan, that they have imperfect senses because they can't understand that Krishna's God, even though sometimes he shows it. But it's just all part of their loving exchange with Krishna under the influence of Yoga Maya. But we, in our state, you know, we're in a terrible state. And our mistakes and illusions and imperfect senses and cheating and so on, they simply take us further and further away from Krishna at every step almost. They're not connected with Krishna in any way. They're not part of some loving exchange with Krishna in any way at all. And even, Prabhupada explained that even if a devotee makes a mistake, Krishna will make that mistake be not a mistake and be beneficial out of affection. Lord Brahma says in the second canto, by the grace of the Lord, now I'm situated in my relationship with him, whatever I say is never untrue. Not just because he's now become so intelligent that he's always able to say the right thing, but whatever he says, Krishna makes it come true out of love. So it's like that, the apparent imperfections of the devotees. Out of love, Krishna doesn't allow them to be imperfections, on one hand. And on the other hand, because he's in control and he's directing, he's Rishikesh, the master of the senses of the devotees. Therefore, he's usually causing, you know, whatever appears to be some sort of mistaken behavior or something wrong. He's causing it in order to enhance his pastimes. So it's certainly not, you know, the defect in the sense of separating them from Krishna or placing them in some bad position, some undesirable position at all. Any other comments?
In the verse, the word teja is there. I don't know what the translation is exactly.
Was, effulgence? It's effulgence, yeah.
So that's... Lord Narayan has that. Devotees also, how do they manifest this?
Well, the soul is effulgent.
Yeah.
Yes, the soul. Like the Brahma Jyoti. What is the Brahma Jyoti? It's
effulgence.
Many souls. Well, it's also many souls there. The jivas there, and they're very effulgent. And generally you can't see the jivas because they are so effulgent. It appears just to be like a unified state or homogenous state of effulgence. Yeah. Prabhupada said that the soul is more effulgent than a million suns. So effulgent. Actually, the sun is a manifestation of the effulgence of Surya, one person. And of course Krishna is even more effulgent. And here he's described as being as dazzling as the sun. But that is a great understatement. Because even the universal form in Arjuna saw it, it was more dazzling than, it says, if hundreds and thousands of suns had risen at once. They couldn't have compared to the effulgence of the universal form. What to speak of the form of the Lord directly? Yeah.
What well, as you just said, and the Brahma Jyoti, there's many souls, and this
yes.
The form. So that, because we normally know that then Brahma Jyoti, there's no like relationship. Right?
Yes. Well, they're existing as little atomic. Like little atomic entities. They're existing in the state of spirit-soul. Spirit-soul. 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair. Just that tiny, tiny little form, which is very fully effulgent.